This is Ryan Fitzpatrick, and you're listening to the Neil Reynolds Podcast.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Neil Reynolds Podcast and episode 15 of our current season. Now, after a busy schedule around the NFL London games, we return to our usual format on the podcast. And to get us going again, I have a special guest in the form of Sam Monson from Pro Football Focus. Sam, like me and so many others, grew up an NFL fan, but thanks to the NFL UK message board and a lot of hard work between now and then, he's carved out a career helping to make Pro Football Focus the largest NFL analytics platform in the business. His story is an interesting one for any fans looking to turn their passion into a career, something I often get asked about myself. So before we get into our conversation, remember though, you can watch this episode for free by heading over to nflgamepass.com. Better still, if you sign up to NFL Game Pass, you can access exclusive NFL content and match action, all now for a lower price. I will have more on that later in this episode, but first let's get to my chat with Sam, where we started by talking about how long it's taken to finally have him as a guest on the Neil Reynolds Podcast. We first discussed this ahead of the Chiefs 49ers Super Bowl about you coming on as a guest. So it's taken a little while. I apologize.
Yeah.
We've had some stuff going on though, right?
Right. There's some things that came up between now and then. I think that's acceptable.
Yeah. Tell me about growing up. We'll go through your whole career and to where you are now with Pro Football Focus. Because I think the journey is, because obviously I guess you were a fan like I was. You were actually, we're pretty similar in you were a fan, I was a fan. We both played football, probably in front of one man and a dog or something close to it.
Yeah.
And now we're both in the media. So when did you first notice the NFL? When did it kind of come on your radar, so to speak?
I had a kind of weird pathway to it because my dad's a surgeon. So we moved around quite a lot when I was a kid, several different places in the UK, Ireland a couple of times. And there was one stint in America, in Minnesota for a year when I was about seven. I think that's when I kind of first got into football in some way, shape or form. I think somehow my dad was a fan before then, probably from some previous trip of his to America. But he was a 49ers fan rather than a Vikings fan. But sort of between the two things, I think that kind of was the first touch point with football, American football. And then somewhere, I think we got lucky in terms of timing, like, you know, the internet comes along and becomes like a much bigger thing. Access to the game starts to go nuts with Sky and all those kinds of things. And, you know, if my life had been kind of 10 years before, I probably would have had a much tougher time of just getting into it the same way. But because you could suddenly watch the games on Sky and, you know, you had access in a way you didn't have before, you could kind of foster that kind of fandom, even if, you know, nobody else you knew was really into it. Right. So kind of going off to college in Newcastle was the right kind of timing for that kind of thing. I had housemates that didn't like it, but would watch it if it was on, like if you, you could kind of convince them to watch along with you. So yeah, that was kind of the starting point and the growth of it. And then really like PFF in a large way owes itself to the NFL UK, like official message board, the chat forum. Like that's where most of the original guys, most of the core people that started it off came from. Neil Hornsby set up the company, set up the thing, had the idea, started doing the tech stuff, had a guy to help him do that from his day job. But then he reached a point where he was like, right now I need guys to come and help do games, right? I have this idea to grade and cover all these games, but I don't have the manpower. Mm. So if you're in the UK and you need like people to help grade and chart football games, like that's not a huge source of people, you know, ready workforce that you know. So he turned to the NFL UK message board and was like, well, I know some of these guys, you know, albeit online know them, you know, I have an idea of what they know. I know a little bit about them and, you know, have confidence in their ability to do this. So he just started kind of reaching out to anybody and everybody that he knew on that chat forum. And a bunch of us ended up working for PFF once it became a thing.
That's fantastic. I knew of that forum. I mean, I didn't go in there very often because I'd often get quite I'd often get quite a kick in there. So I try and stay out of that, but I know it's great. It's a great story. It's a real good success story. Before we get to more of PFF, so when did you start playing the game then? And what position did you play and how did that come about?
So I think 2008 was the year that I started playing in Dublin. I had kind of, again, been moving around. I did college in Newcastle. And then after that, I decided to move back to Ireland because I was becoming a little bit too English for my own liking, you know, decided that if I was going to get any chance of getting back to being Irish, I needed to actually be in Ireland. So moved back there, hadn't done a whole lot of like sports stuff during college. I'd actually kind of gone from doing it at school, basically did nothing in college, and then wanted to start taking up some sports stuff again. So I started playing tag rugby there and then decided, well, let's go down and try out some football. So the very first tryout that I went for was a team called the Talla Outlaws, who didn't last very long, for good reason. It was an absolute disaster. And like the training session was a joke. It wasn't organized. It was a mess. And it wasn't tremendously safe either. So I did like one training session with them and thought, okay, I want to try out a different team. And if it's the same level of like joke, I'm just not doing this. So then I went down to the DCU Saints, and that was actually like more organized, more sensible, looked more like what you thought it would look like. So started playing with them, and I was a wide receiver for the first few years. When the Saints folded, a lot of the Saints moved to a different team, the West Dublin Rhinos. At that point, I moved to defensive back and was playing some corner, and then moved to safety for the last couple of years.
So when you were playing, a couple of questions. Obviously, I played tight end as well. I just found something else out in common. Both our fathers are 49ers fans, so it's all kind of linked here, Sam. But I found that, yes, we didn't play professionally, but it helps you understand the game. I always say to people, look, I didn't play professionally, but I know it's different catching over the middle than catching a 5 yard out. You know, there's a lot more that's going to hit me if I'm over the middle. Did it help you understand the game more? And when you watched or played, were you always a kind of student of the game? So, because now you're into a point where you're really studying the game. I wonder if that was there from early when you were just a player and a fan.
It definitely does help you. It changes your understanding. Like I was definitely one of those people before I was playing who were like, you know, anybody that says you need to play the game, they're just kind of complaining and, you know, they don't like talking to people that didn't play the game. So they don't want to give those guys the respect of having a valid opinion. And while I don't think you have to play the game to have, you know, smart insights and understand what you're talking about and all those kinds of things, it does change and it does add things. And there's something about, not necessarily about the sort of X's and O's of the game, but just being able to connect it to something physically, like, you know, any sports like this, right? Just understanding what you can do physically within the game, I think changes how you view the people that try and succeed or try and fail doing it when you're watching on TV. Like, it's the same with soccer. It's the same with rugby. It's the same with any game. Once you have a sort of connection in your own brain that, oh yeah, the time I tried that, it didn't go that well, or yeah, you can actually make that play or whatever. I think it does change how you view it, and it changes sort of what you think about certain like intricacies and all that kind of stuff. So it's definitely a useful thing. I don't know how much of a kind of student of it I was in those terms. We had some very kind of unique teams. Like the DCU Saints, I think, was one of the most talented teams in the country, but we had like a lot of college guys, and like maybe the work ethic wasn't the best in the world, and we had a tendency to dramatically underachieve, I think, compared with our talent level. And then the Rhinos was more kind of organized and structured, and but we didn't have as many big bodies. Like that was our biggest problem, is a lot of the times we couldn't stop the run. So, you know, as a essentially ball playing free safety, and I would spend my life like, look, if we can just force them to the air, we're golden. Like, so I was pretty good at, you know, our coverage group generally was pretty good at being able to read the quarterback and understand where they wanted to go with the ball and all those kinds of things. Half the time it didn't matter because we just couldn't stop the team running on us and couldn't force them to put it in the air.
So for all you fans out there who are dreaming of or have dreamt of a career working in football, this part of the podcast is for you. How did Sam get involved with Pro Football Focus to start building his career?
When I was in Dublin, I did a master's in journalism. So I'd kind of done like small pieces of writing here and there for various different things. Honestly, at the start, PFF wasn't even a journalism gig. Like, and it actually didn't even become one for quite a number of years. Like we were hired to be data collectors and graders and, you know, do the stuff that was providing the information to be able to do stuff. Then we realized pretty early that, look, for this to become a thing, you need to have something at the end of it, right? Like, there's no point just having this database of information if you can't show people it. So we had the website and we were just writing articles like, you know, game recaps or, you know, here's our team of the week or whatever, like just things that became how we showcase our information. And the website and the content was our marketing. Like, this was how you became familiar with PFF when you first found out our team of the week or the stats or whatever. And then you realize we have this whole world of things that we can, that you can get into. So that, and sort of pushing out those pieces to journalists who would use them, like that became our entire marketing system. But that was very much like a secondary thing. You know, that was after you've done your grading and you crank through your assigned games of the week, now you can get to this stuff. Like, that's part of the sort of added that you just need to do for this thing to go anywhere. What was the second part of that question? Sorry.
Well, no, it's just that it was more, you know, kind of when you eventually moved over, how long had you been working for PFF before you moved over there and now got this, what is the accent now? It's like still Irish, American, a bit of everything.
No, it's a mess. Like, you know, when you turn on the Golf Channel and you hear that guy who you can tell used to be Irish at one point, but is now like somewhere in the Midwest, like that's me. It's a mess. I need to just start listening to nothing but, you know, Irish podcasts or something to try and rescue it. I actually, it turns out, pick up accents really quickly and have for my entire life. So I've had like half a dozen ridiculously strong.
So did you have a Geordie accent? So have you gone Geordie?
No, Geordie I didn't have, but I did have a Cockney accent. I had a Cockney accent for a while. And then when I moved, so we went from London to between Hull and York, like split the difference. And when I lived there, it kind of neutralized itself to just like a weird middle English that wasn't anything. So I kind of settled on that and then escaped Geordie and then moved back to Ireland and got the Irish accent back. And then now I've moved over here, lost it again.
So when did you move over? Yeah, that was my question before I got distracted by your accent.
PFF was almost entirely remote. Everybody was remote. There was no like central office. Everybody was just working from home. It was almost all, it started off with like UK and Irish people. And then we hired American people and it was people everywhere. It moved over when Chris Collinsworth bought the company. So Chris bought in 2014, and obviously Chris, Cincinnati Bengals legend, Chris is based over here, just outside Cincinnati in Northern Kentucky. So at that point it's like, well, let's build Cincinnati HQ. Let's build an actual headquarters over here. We'll bring everybody over. Neil Hornsby moved over pretty quickly. And then we kind of started moving over a lot of the key people. Steve Palazzolo came over from Boston. Rick Drummond, who's on the B2B side of things, moved over from California. A lot of people moved over here. It became much more of a pain to get a visa for me for some reason. The system was a bit of a nightmare. So it took me a while to get over here, but then I got over in 2017.
It is one of the most amazing success stories, UK, Ireland, Europe, whichever way you want to kind of label it. But, you know, we've had Adam Dirdy coaching now in the NFL. Jay Ajayi's won a Super Bowl. But what you guys have done and growing this and to where PFF is the go-to place for all the teams, all the colleges, is incredible. But you have put in the groundwork as well. I remember being on the NFL UK live stage shows where we'd go around the country. I met yourself. I met Neil Hornsby. And, you know, you wanted to talk to the guys that were on the tour. What should we be looking for? Is there any intricacies we're missing here? So it has grown incredibly. You don't have to name names, but what types of people are still most resistant to analytics?
Yeah, I think the most resistant ones, just from a kind of default starting position, are always the coaches, right? Like the guys that have been doing it a certain way forever and think that anybody coming from the outside or anyone that isn't a, you know, a football guy just doesn't know. They don't understand. They're not in the room. All those kind of cliches that you hear. And it's just none of them, when you sit them down and kind of walk them through the tape and say, well, here's what we're doing, this is what it ends up being, none of them come out and go, oh, that's ridiculous. Like, I'm out. But almost universally, they're immediately bought in, to, in some cases, literally, once you show them. But those are the ones that have the most resistance. So when you kind of work your way into the NFL teams, you don't go in via the coach. You know, you typically go in via the kind of the different areas, the analytics guys, the personnel guys. You kind of work your way through the building. That being said, once the coach gets on board, those guys become your best advocates. And often because, you know, there's such change in the coaching landscape, you know, guys get fired, guys, there's just so much turnover. So you get a guy that's like bought into PFF and he moves, you know, from one team to the next, like he'll ensure that that team has PFF as well and sort of starts promoting it as, hey, this is something you guys need. And, you know, certain coaches in college have been really good to us in that respect of, you start off, you get one guy on board and this guy gets half the conference in on it because of what an important tool it is for them. But I think from people that kind of come from it from nothing and don't understand who you are, what you're doing, you know, your first meeting, the coach is not the guy that's going to give you the time of day to begin with. Like, he's the one that's going to take the toughest or the most amount of work to convince and to bring on board.
And I guess that's what you guys have had to do over the years. I remember Neil going on a training camp tour with Peter King and players coming up to him saying, well, how do you know what play we're running? And so I guess it was never going to be an overnight thing, but I feel like everyone mentions it whenever they're doing a story now. You know, he's the fifth rated tackle from PFF. It's all of this stuff. And the way you now write around it brings so much more to it as well, Sam, I think, as the kind of lead analyst and the lead writer. So I guess it was never going to be an overnight thing. It's a classic example where you need to show people, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And that was our thing all along. It was, I remember having these kind of, you know, we called them AGMs, but it was essentially like six guys in Neil's house in Luton. And, you know, we had all these ideas of like, you could sell it to agents, you could sell it to networks, you could sell it to these areas of the team. We had all these things planned out of like the various areas that would want PFF. But we didn't have like a roadmap to get there, right? And we knew that was the end point. Here's the starting point, but had no real idea how you get from here to there. And it really was just step by step, get, you know, talk to this guy. He can talk to another guy and just slowly but surely convincing everybody you came across along the way. And, you know, there have been some really good people to us in the NFL along the way that kind of helped that process along. You know, the first couple of steps where NFL teams finally gave us the time of day and we're curious enough to buy in. And, you know, again, once they sort of see what's going on and what it's all about, you do get the buy-in. And that's the most important step. It's just that crossing that threshold from nobody's really interested in hearing what you have to say to the first couple of people that make that move and go, okay, I'll hear you out. And then, you know, we would go to the combine every year and try and meet with teams there. Cause obviously everybody's in the combine. All 32 teams, all various areas of the teams are there for the whole week. And we would go there and we'd try and meet with all these teams. And, you know, the first couple of years, it was a grind and we'd get like a third of the teams and it was great. Like it was a third of the teams was better than the almost no teams we were talking with before. But, you know, it was tough. You would have some teams just didn't want any part of it. And then now, you know, all 32 teams, it's the touch point. We go meet with those teams. We hear feedback. We hear what they want to get better, what they think is missing, you know, all those kinds of things. It's like a kind of development week for us. But just the difference from those first couple of years where it was such a grind to get anybody to, you know, show up and even talk to you, to the point where all of them are bought in, literally, you know, all of them pay for the service. All of them are invested in making it better and, you know, trying to improve it and all those kinds of things. It's just amazing. Like the difference it's been.
We'll be back with more from Sam after this short break.
This is Jack Crawford and you're listening to the Neil Reynolds podcast.
So it's that time of the podcast where we tell you all about our presenting partner for the 2021 season, NFL Game Pass. And now you can enjoy more of the action for less as we head into week 9 of the campaign. There are some big games coming up as well. You see, the San Francisco 49ers will host the Arizona Cardinals in a week 5 rematch. The Niners will be looking to rectify the previous 17-10 loss they suffered 4 weeks ago. And we'll also see the Philadelphia Eagles play host to the Los Angeles Chargers this week. LA may lead the series 7-5. 5-0, but of the 12 matchups in the series history between these teams, 10 were decided by one score, including the last four, and the Chargers have lost back-to-back games, so they need to get back on track. There will be plenty more NFL action in week 9. You catch it all live and on demand on NFL Game Pass. Sign up now for a new low price with a 50% discount. Just head over to nflgamepass.com where you can watch every episode of the Neil Reynolds podcast for free.
Hi, I'm Bruce Arians, and you're listening to the Neil Reynolds podcast.
Welcome back to the Neil Reynolds podcast and my chat with Sam Monson from Pro Football Focus. Now, before the break, we heard how Sam got into PFF, how it grew from effectively the NFL UK message boards to the giant in the game that helps coaches, agents and players today. And it means that people like him perhaps have insights into the game that others maybe don't have, notably on why quarterbacks are so valuable to their teams.
Yeah, quarterback is easily the most valuable position. And it's not only that, but it's one of those things that everybody knows. It's a truism in the NFL, and you know, nobody would dispute that. And whatever percentage you think it's worth, it's probably worth more than that. Like the way the game has gone of just all pass all the time, quarterback has never been more important. They're the guys that can diagnose and beat whatever the defense is playing. They're the guys that can determine whether you're going to go run pass in the first place. You know, if it's a bad look for the defense, you can check out of the play, go to something else. Like quarterback has just never been more important. After that, I think it gets more difficult, more controversial. We have kind of, I think you stick with the passing game, you know, whether it's receivers, whether it's defensive backs to stop the pass, but it does get more muddy because, you know, one quarterback is all you need essentially, right? You go, I mean, most teams, if you go to your backup, the season's over. So
you're in trouble anyway. Yeah.
Yeah. You get that one guy and it doesn't matter about anything else. He's enough. Other positions though, it becomes, well, what's more valuable, one elite receiver or, you know, two or three elite pass rushers, or like, you know, how much can one player impact a group versus the weak link? So there are certain positions that are, I think, strong link entities. And then there are certain positions that are weak link entities. Like if you have a weakness at cornerback, it doesn't matter that much how good your number one is, because you're just going to go over to number two the whole time. Like this was, remember years ago when the Raiders had Nnamdi Asamoah.
Yes.
And Nnamdi Asamoah would play right cornerback the whole time and be locked up in man coverage. And he would see like 20 targets in a year because you never needed to test him. You could just go the other side where they had this succession of guys that were getting torched. And the ball never needed to go towards Asamoah. So like, if you're not going to use that guy in particular in the way that maximizes his impact, you really can just ignore him. At which point, like, how much impact is he having? The fact that Nnamdi Asamoah was taking away your left wide receiver, not even like your number one, just whoever you lined up on that side of the field, was kind of irrelevant if you could just go everywhere else with the football.
So is the best player in the NFL right now a quarterback? Or is it somebody else in your mind?
I would argue that the best player in the NFL is Aaron Donald. I would also argue
that it's the quarterback.
He does. I would also argue that it's pretty comfortable and the distance between him and everybody else is pretty large. The only other argument that I would entertain for a period of time would be Justin Tucker. Justin Tucker is the only player that has like a comparable distance between him and the next guy over any extended period of time. The problem is, you know, he's a kicker. So there's a degree to which you're like, okay, kickers might be people too, but they're not really football players. You know, they kick the ball. Occasionally they'll try and run and make an attempt at a tackle, but it's not quite the same thing as playing 65 snaps against, you know, offensive linemen and trying to get a quarterback. So I think just the distance between Aaron Donald and the next guy in terms of what he does, rushing the passer, beating blocks, it's just so huge. And particularly if you go back, like this year, it's closer, but you know, over 2, 3, 4, 5 years, like nobody is even in the discussion. Nobody's even in the same realm of play. Whereas if you look at quarterback, you know, whether it's Mahomes, whether it's Aaron Rodgers, whether it's Lamar Jackson, like whoever you pick, it's not that guy every year. Like Rodgers was the MVP last year. Lamar, every year there's a different guy who's the best quarterback in the NFL. Tom Brady is the greatest of all time, but he hasn't won MVP over the last few years, which has been his one of his best stretches. So the gap between them all is pretty narrow. Whereas Aaron Donald should have won like 5 straight Defensive Player of the Year awards. And the only reason he hasn't is because of that kind of voter fatigue thing of, well, this wasn't quite as good as his 20 sack season. So instead, we're going to give it to the cornerback that's got a ton of plays.
So, Sam, in your time covering the NFL for PFF, you mentioned the prevalence of the pass. Have you seen the league change dramatically? And if it's going to change again, sometimes things go in cycles, new things come along. Where do you think it will go next?
I think it's changed in a ton of different ways. You know, you could spend some time talking about how it's changed since PFF's been going. I think one of the things is we're seeing now just this push of analytics and the way decisions in game are changing. You know, that's happening right now, and it's pretty sort of far along in terms of where we are in the crest of that wave. But you don't have to go back very far to find like just any fourth down decision. Like you go for a 4th-and-1, go for a 4th-and-2. That was considered, you know, radical. That was considered crazy, like maverick kind of coach. Now, like there's a much greater understanding of how many of those you should be going for from a sort of statistical point of view. And we've almost reached the tipping point now, I think, where coaches are taking heat for not going for it. You know, Pete Carroll is taking a ton of heat for being this hyper-conservative coach because he almost never goes for those. You go back 10 years and nobody
flipped, doesn't it?
Yeah, nobody would be mentioning it. Like, it would be the crazy coaches that are going for it. And look at this guy, Pete Carroll, who always wins, who never goes for these. So it's definitely turning in that direction. But also, like, just the way the game has changed from a schematic point of view, going all pass, going spread formations. Like, if you go back and look at some of those games that PFF was grading at the start, 2006, 2007, it's like a different game. I mean, it's I formation, it's fullbacks, it's heavy sets, it's tight ends, it's, you know, there's no 11 personnel, the 3 wide receivers thing. That's almost never there. The idea of, like, I mean, you know, you go back before Wes Welker, and like there wasn't really the idea of a full-time slot receiver. Like, it didn't, those guys didn't really, that's why people like Wes Welker went undrafted, because it's not like Wes Welker isn't a good player. It's that we don't really have that role in the NFL. So what are we going to do with him? And it was only when, you know, the Dolphins showed that you could move him around and he could have return skills that the Patriots like, oh, okay, now we're interested. Let's see what we can do with this guy. But like, you know, you go back years and there are players like Peter Warwick, who's one of the greatest college players of all time, goes to the NFL. There's just no like role for him. So they couldn't work out how to use him. Peter Warwick now, I would imagine, would be 10 times better than he was when he actually came out. So I think the league has moved in that direction. The obvious pivot is like back where it came from. You know what I mean? Like the league goes in cycles. So the Patriots look like they've been sort of gearing up for this for a while, but heading back in this power smash mouth kind of direction with fullbacks and big tight ends. And, you know, it will be different. Like the way they'll kind of deploy those guys, I think it'll be more sophisticated, but I think we're probably due for, you know, a few teams heading back in that direction of power as opposed to speed, quickness, and space.
Now, for regular listeners of this podcast or for those who follow me elsewhere, I often speak about my wow moment in the NFL when I was there to see Malcolm Butler intercept Russell Wilson in the Super Bowl. I was on the sidelines for Sky Sports on that goal line at that end of the field for that moment of NFL history. We all have one. And for a man who studies the NFL every week, a man who goes over every snap with minute detail, I wanted to ask Sam what his one was. And it turns out, great minds think alike.
It honestly might be that exact play. Like that, it is probably the greatest single play in Super Bowl history. It's also, that year was the first year that PFF did college football as well. So Chris bought the company, and Chris's big thing was, we need to do college because then we can sell, you know, to every NFL team in terms of draft stuff. That's where the real money is. So that was our first year of doing college football. And we did it before kind of rapidly expanding our pool of analysts, right? So we just added whatever it is, 700, 800 games to the slate and had to get them done before the combine, which is where we meet all the teams and showcase the stuff. So at the end of the NFL season, we're kind of dragging behind, but all of a sudden NFL has kind of opened up. Now we've got, now we can really attack this thing. So January that year became what was affectionately known at PFF as Hell Month, where you just ground through like so many college games for 30 days straight. And the finishing date was the Super Bowl. So we could get all this in for NFL teams. And I was working on the last game, which I'll never forget. It was Middle Tennessee State against Eastern Michigan with this like hateful uniform combination, this terrible quality tape. It was a nightmare. And we were like piecing up this final game just to get it finally finished. Finished at like 10 p.m., you know, Dublin time. Super Bowl is about to start. I fully expected to go downstairs, lie on the couch and be asleep in like 20 minutes. But it was that game. So it was a great game. Watched the whole thing. That play happened at the end. And the plan had been from like, you know, Hell Month, Super Bowl, like have a couple of days to just do nothing. And that play was so insane that I like woke up early the next morning and had to write an article about that play, like break down how on earth that happened. Just because it was such a ridiculous play.
There you are. So I hope you enjoyed my conversation with Sam Monson. It's that time of the podcast where I bring in the Mike White of podcast producers, Gary Hayes. Do you know what I'm talking about, Gary?
I don't know, but Mike White sounds like a legend.
He is a legend. Mike White was the quarterback for the New York Jets who this past weekend threw for 405 yards and 3 touchdowns in his first NFL start. Only the second quarterback in history to do that.
Oh, I didn't realize
his
name
for the Zach Wilson.
I didn't realize his name was Mike White because I saw a lot of people on Instagram going crazy about the New York Jets quarterback.
So you're Mike White. You're like, you know, you come in and you just deliver. In an unassuming way.
I'm like the postman. I always deliver.
Well, yeah, mine's always a bit late, but that's another
podcast. It gets there, which is important.
That's the Neil Reynolds Royal Mail podcast, which is available wherever you get your podcasts. Coming up soon, the special. Get yourself ready for Christmas.
Just put your orders in now.
Exactly.
Probably going to be a supply chain.
Right, well, that's taken us off track already. I'm sorry about that. What you got for us, Gary? Got mailbag?
Yeah, Gary Gremlaw's been sending messages in again.
I don't want Gary
anymore. Really.
He's had his one and done. He's done.
When I was with Martin that night, he said, oh, Gary should become a regular feature on the podcast really and have his own question every week. I was like, Gary does. And he went, no, not you, the other.
No, it was a weird sort of, for those who wonder if Gary Gremlaw is a real person, it's actually a toy gremlin that the Miami Dolphins fan club carry around with them. Yeah, it's disturbing. I'm not sure what it represents or is, but let's just park that. It's got two mentions in this podcast now. That's too many, and there won't be a third, so let's move on.
Sorry, Martin. Yeah, so just one question again for you, Neil, although there will be two because I've got an important question for you after this one. But the question this week is from one Mark Jackson on Twitter, and he says or asks, Neil, what is the best live game you have ever seen, either for atmosphere or for it just being an amazing game?
So one that first springs to mind would be the Super Bowl, which saw the Eagles beat the Patriots end of the 2017 season. We had a fantastic studio position above one of the end zones, and yeah, we saw the Patriots lose. You know, the Eagles took down Tom Brady. The Eagles fans were all kind of right underneath our studio. That was incredible.
That was the Philly Super Bowl, right?
That was it. And there was over 1,000 yards of offense. There was one punt, I think, in the whole game. So incredible. But so that would be one. But the one for me was end of the 2009 season, and I went to Arizona for the wild card round of the playoffs for BBC Radio. So I ended up watching, it was early Aaron Rodgers against late Kurt Warner. And Kurt Warner's now a Hall of Famer. Kurt Warner had more touchdown passes. I think he had 5 than he had incompletions on the day. And the Arizona Cardinals won 51-45 in overtime. And they won on Aaron Rodgers kind of fumbled in overtime. The ball kicked off his knee, went into the air, and Carlos Dansby recovered it for the Cardinals in Arizona, running into the end zone for the touchdown. And yeah, I'm calling that game with Greg Brady for BBC Radio. Just one of the most memorable games I've ever seen. And as you can tell from those two games, Gary, I like offense.
Well, offense is the best form of entertainment, isn't it, really?
It is. And do you want to know a little side story to the Arizona trip?
Please.
So it was, there was heavy snow in the UK.
I was going to ask, does this involve weather? And here we go, yeah. Weather again.
Three of my favourite subjects, weather, travel, and the NFL. So there was heavy snow in the UK when I left on the Saturday. So it was a real turn, real harum scarum in and out trip. I flew on the Saturday, and then there was loads of delays because of snow getting out of Heathrow. So I actually got to my hotel at midnight on Arizona time. So that was already like 7 o'clock in the morning, Sunday morning.
That's nasty.
UK time. Then while I was having landed at the airport in Arizona, they lost my bag. I should have just taken, now I would, I'm much more experienced than traveling out. Now I would just take carry on. I'm only going for like 2 nights, but I didn't. I checked my luggage, even though I didn't need to. Even now it's really annoying me that I'm thinking that. So they lost my bag. So I have to go to the game in what I've flown in. Then the game goes into overtime. And then we're flying out that night. We fly out the Sunday night. So the game finishes and we race straight back to the airport, at which point I then get given back my bag, which was at the air. They finally located my bag, but there was no point. I had to go straight to the game. And so I just pick up my bag and get back on a flight. So I was about 24 hours in Arizona, same clothes the whole time, but called one of the most amazing games in NFL history.
I'm just more interested in what happened to your bag for those 24 hours.
I just went round and round the carousel.
Must have seen some sights.
Yeah, no, it didn't. It just, yeah. So there you go. It was, I don't know. I'm really distracted by the fact I can't believe I didn't go hand luggage. I don't know what I was thinking.
Yeah, I'm thinking about it now, actually. It's always so. You remember when we started this podcast and we did Fitz and we both traveled light and we were in and out of Tampa Airport so quick?
Mm-hmm.
The beauty of it.
Since then, I've done eight day training camp trips with hand luggage. How the hell could I not do 24 hours in Arizona without checking my luggage in? I don't know what I thought I was going to wear. I was going to do like costume changes every quarter. I'm going to be like Madonna calling the game for BBC Radio.
When you're doing 8 days on hand luggage, are you turning your boxes inside out or you're bringing 8 pairs?
No, you just roll them up really small. You take a couple of pairs of shorts and 8 polo shirts. That's it, because it's training camp. You don't need any clothes. You don't get to go out. So, because I think I've told you this before, my training camp schedule is ridiculous. So it's get up in the morning, interview a bunch of players and coaches, go to the airport, fly at night, get to the hotel about midnight, sleep, get up, interview players and coaches, airport, fly, sleep, interview, airport, fly, sleep, times 8.
Or the glamour 10, of it sometimes. All.
Yeah, I mean, it's good. You get used to taking your belt off and your shoes off when you go through security and stuff. You can become a ninja when it comes to getting all your... I was going to say, become a ninja and get my clothes off. That's another podcast.
Another career beckons for Reynolds.
Exactly. Well, yeah, because I'm burying this one in the dust as we speak. So let's stop there. It's too much talking.
Yeah, well, I do have another question for you, actually.
Oh, no.
Do you know what next week is?
Week 9 in the NFL.
And next week is when you turn 50. Well, not
that's
you personally,
year.
But this
well, no, that's
podcast
next year. It's
will
not
turn,
a million miles away.
This podcast will turn 50 next week. So it's our 50th episode next week. So
wow.
I've got a couple of prizes in store for you, which I've been working on.
Have you?
but I'm hoping you've got a surprise in store for me with a super duper guest.
Like an actual guest.
Yeah, you've got one, right?
Well, I'll give you a little tease now, Gary, and I'll just come out with them and then let's see if they come through. I wanted to get an active player. So I've been working with the Chiefs for a while, trying to get Patrick Mahomes. That's not panned out yet, but I'm still working on that. But I think we will have an active player. So I've had a yes from Adam Thielen of the Minnesota Vikings, who's one of the best wide receivers in the NFL today. And actually, he's got a really good story. And also, Dearness Johnson, who was a star for the Cleveland Browns a couple of weeks ago. You'll really enjoy his story. He's got a fantastic tale to tell. So those could both get recorded this week. And I'm hoping that one of those will be episode 50. I had no idea we were at 50. There you go. So, but we'll have an active player. That's what I'm going to say for the 50th episode then.
Excellent. So it sounds like it's going to be a good one.
Well, yeah, let's hope so. We've got a busy week between now and next week to get it all done.
But, roll up your sleeves. You
know, yep, be ready for the call. The bat phone will ring. I'll send up the bat signal. And you across the water from Kent to Essex, the bat signal will go up. And then you'll be scurrying onto Zoom and we'll make it happen. But thank you, everyone, for joining us once again on the Neil Reynolds podcast presented by NFL Game Pass. My thanks to Gary. And thanks to Sam Monson. And we'll see you next time when we all turn 50. Listening to the Neil Reynolds podcast. This episode was hosted by myself, Neil Reynolds, while Gary Hayes is our producer. Gary and I have also written this series together. Our consultant producers are Kerry Levy, Nick Lapworth, and Neil Pacchietto. Matt Alabaster is responsible for all of our artwork, including the graphics and videos across our social media channels. Taylor Hayes mixed this episode and also composed our theme music. If you'd like to keep up to date with everything we're doing throughout the season, then please follow us on Twitter and Instagram at the NR Podcast. My personal account is also at Neil Reynolds NFL. If you've enjoyed this podcast and would like to hear more like it, then visit highway61.media. That's HWY61.media. Please tell your friends about the podcast, help spread the word. Better still, leave us a rating and a review wherever you're listening. This has been another Highway 61 production for the Reynolds Podcast Network.